and welcome to Crackpot Theories, the podcast where everything is plausible until proven otherwise. I am Sinead.
And I'm Circa.
And this is an exciting episode for me today. I get to kind of relax and just react to things and tell you that I haven't watched any of the clips that you sent me.
Yeah.
For once, it's like the tables have turned. It's exciting. So what are we talking about today?
Yes, today is one of the episodes I've been very much looking forward to. And I've been doing so much research at my cork board. I've ran out of red string. And it's one that's kind of familiar. You'd see an awful lot of it online, but I'm doing it in a bit more of a swing because I don't agree with the mainline theory here.
Okay, so what are we talking about here?
Today, we are talking about Murder, She Wrote. I recently got into Murder, She Wrote because I watch a YouTuber called Pushing Up Roses, uh-huh, who's doing a load about Murder, She Wrote, obviously.
I am familiar with the work of Pushing Up Roses.
And I was like, this sounds like a great show to just watch in the background when I'm working. So I started putting it on. And then the theory started forming like mind bubbles.
Now, there has been a theory that I've actually seen quite a lot about Murder, She Wrote. Now, I haven't watched any much Murder, She Wrote. I've seen episodes here and there. I've seen it in the background of things. I've seen the memes. And the theory that seemed to be going around is that the main character was like a serial killer.
That is the more popular one. But ooh, I completely disagree with this.
Okay.
I disagree with this. And this is going to be the basis of our theory here.
Okay, I am excited.
You see, Murder, She Wrote started in the 1980s. I think it was 1984. Mm-hmm. Jessica Fletcher is the main character. She plays a writer / retired teacher. It's played by Angela Lansbury, you know, Mrs. Potts.
Of course, yes. I've seen her in quite
Tale
a few
is
things.
All His Time.
Also in The Company of Wolves, where she got decapitated.
That is majestic. That will come up later in the theory.
Oh, no.
And I have watched the majority of Murder, She Wrote. Now, maybe a season away from finishing it. And I've discovered something. The theory is that she's a serial killer. And I disagree.
Okay.
Because she's always there just as or before the murder happens. And she's never like in the room when the murder happens. And you can see people, the murderer murdering. So it's very clearly not her. However, what usually appears around about the time of death? The Grim Reaper or an angel of death. It would make so much more sense.
Okay.
So there is 264 episodes of Murder, She Wrote. I think it's like 12 seasons and 4 movies. Please forgive me.
There's movies?
There is little like television movies.
Oh, okay. So like TV special kind of things, you know, as we used to call them in the 90s, OVAs.
Oh, the good old animu OVAs.
Yes.
But in those 264 episodes, there is 274 deaths. Mm. That is a lot of deaths.
Even for very prolific serial killers and mass murderers, that's quite a lot.
It's too many. It's too many for a woman in her 60s to carry out without being caught. It's just not possible. No matter which way you do it, you could go full Dexter on it and it just, it's too much. Now, let's talk about Cabot Cove,
okay,
where she lives. Cabot Cove has the highest death toll per head in the entire world. Ooh. It is like the center of evil because per average, there is a 5.3 corpse per year average.
Wow, that does seem like a lot of corpses.
That is in the population of about 3,560 people, which is a 60% higher than Honduras. That is the real life murder capital of the world. And this is supposed to be a teeny tiny town in rural Maine.
Yeah, that does seem odd.
It would make sense to have such a death toll if death herself lived there.
That's a good point.
So much suspicious accidents and murders. It has to, oh.
You know, it kind of reminds me of, remember the film Hot Fuzz, when all the deaths happened and the guy just said to them, you know, well, our murder rate is very low, but our accident rate is sky high.
Yes.
Does that not seem a bit suspicious?
Like, that would mean, like, in Honduras, there is a murder or a violent death every 74 minutes.
Wow.
Which, you know, if you look at a Murder, She Wrote episode, it's about 60 minutes.
Whack.
Yeah.
Literally.
But it's also set in Maine. What else do you know is set in Maine?
Most of the oeuvre of Stephen King.
Yes. Yes, it is. Including things like Misery and Christine and like
Cujo
and It, all set in Maine. So there's something about Maine that makes it the Pontypandy of America.
Oh my God, we're back to Pontypandy.
The mouth of hell is under Maine, I'm telling you. But it's just, it's so suspicious. Why did they pick Maine of all places? So... it's definitely suspicious.
I wonder, is there some sort of like almost like a ley line that connects Maine and Pontypandy? Because nobody actually ever dies in Pontypandy, but it is permanently on fire.
Yeah.
And yet Maine doesn't seem to have very many earthquakes or natural disasters. And yet it has all the murders or all the deaths you might associate with a place that is permanently on fire. So is it possible that the two are somehow connected on some sort of an axis? We need a map for this.
It's a connection to the underworld. The natural disaster is Jessica Fletcher.
Okay.
Now, let's dig a little deeper. Go a little deeper. So... Jessica Fletcher. Do you know? Jessica Fletcher actually holds the world record for the most amount of murders, air quotes, solved. Yes.
By anyone, like, are we going with, is this solved by fictional people or solved by actual people? Or both?
Fictional people. She holds the world record. But let's get the name Jessica in general. Do you know the origins of the name Jessica?
I do not.
According to my deep, deep internet sleuthing, because I'm trying to get my sleuth hat on too. Jessica means the Hebrew of foresight or to be seen before. Ooh. You know what that means? Harbinger of death. Harbinger of death.
Harbinger.
There we go. She foretold the deaths of these people because she happens to be in the right place just before a murder happens.
Mm-hmm.
How does she know this? This is suspicious. She just seems to appear suspiciously by some... Oh, I have a class to teach in this particular part. That's totally legit.
I think one thing that I saw, not obviously not in an episode because I've never watched the actual show itself, but in a meme... She arrived in Ireland.
She did.
For a little bit. She and did. A murder happened there. And I mean, we live in Ireland. We know that the murder rate is not that high generally.
This also comes into your previous remark of headlessness.
Ah.
Because if you go into Irish mythology, we have our own version of a Grim Reaper called a Dullahan.
Oh, yes.
Which is a beheaded horse rider. In the episode... when she's in Ireland, suddenly the murder victim gets what?
Decapitated. Oh. So is it a kind of thing like, I suppose this ties into another thing that I saw one time where in France, the tooth fairy is actually a mouse. So they have like an international division. Is it like almost she kind of changes her appearance based on the countries that she visited or changes some aspect of the deaths in order to reflect the local culture?
Yes, because, you know, all the pop culture would see a Grim Reaper as like this dark, foreboding figure, dark, long cloak, skelly bob. Like, you know, they're supposed to be very threatening when we see them. But my own personal opinion, I don't know if it's other people, if... you were being taken away to your final resting place, it would be by somebody warm, somebody nice, someone to settle your soul, to be like, it's okay, let's go and be at peace.
People who've had near-death experiences do say that death seemed to kind of welcome them almost, you know, there's a whole step into the light thing about it.
And if you look at Jessica Fletcher, she is very well-liked. Everyone around her is instantly... at peace. They're all kind of like, yeah, we trust you. You're so nice.
She is very cute for an elderly woman.
She's very cute. She's very pleasing to the eye. She's very personable. Everybody.
She's got a lovely speaking voice too.
Oh yeah. Gosh. Angela Lansbury has the most perfect voice. I wish she did audiobooks. And if she does, please link me. I want her to read me Harry Potter.
Or even Goodnight Moon.
Oh my gosh.
Okay.
Yes. I lost my train of thought. Oh no.
Sorry. Okay, yeah. So she's very pleasing to the eye.
Sorry. She's very kind and she's very nice looking. But also, you ever notice when you look at Angela Lansbury that she has very wide, bright eyes?
Yes.
They're the focus point of her face. Like, you can instantly see very wide blue eyes. Now, this is a stretch. I better stretch out my calves and my arm muscles before I make this stretch now.
Okay.
Aerobics at this hour of the evening. In certain types of mythology,
harbingers.
Yes, harbingers of death.
You should probably just use a different word.
Omens of death are often depicted as owls.
Okay.
What would Angela Lansbury look like if she was an owl?
One of those barn owls, except with blue eyes.
With giant eyes. And another thing to do with eyes as well, which is another one of my very large stretches. I'm about to compete in the Olympics of jumps here. Blue eyes are often said in certain types of mythology to be seen as spiritual or foreseeing, as in you have a better connection to the spiritual world if you have very bright blue eyes.
Oh, that's interesting.
So you can even see it in her face that she's like
some sort of a mystic aura to her. That's very apt. I thought it was just because she was old. Do you remember in Father Ted, when Ted said, you know, there's something about old women, they're closer to God than any the rest of us will ever be.
Yes, exactly.
That old woman, I know what you're up to.
And you see, Jessica Fletcher always seems to know small details that even like Sherlock Holmes would have a hard time trying to figure out some of these things. She stretches more than I do.
Okay.
Like, she'll be able to pick, oh, that was the motive, and there would be no hint whatsoever that that was the motive. Like, there was one episode quite early on in the season, I think it was in the first season, where the murder was committed by a dog.
Oh, okay.
Yes, but she was somehow able to know this and was able to figure it out when everybody else was like,
are dogs capable of murder?
It was an accidental murder, quote unquote. Yeah, it was such gobbledygook, but like,
I mean, my dog is capable of a lot of things, but I'm not sure if murder would really come under that list.
Well,
have you ever known a dog that was capable of murder?
No, but I've known several cats that would just be like, yeah.
Well, that goes without saying.
We've all seen the movie.
No, stop it. The movie is beautiful.
But she's able to just know things. And she's always there just before the death happens, which would entail that she has some higher knowledge of what's going to happen. Now, for a woman that has been around roughly 274 corpses, she has seen 274 corpses. And that is a number that has only happened in Cabot Cove. That's not including when she goes on like, well, I'm going to New York for a while and all those murders. That's just in Cabot Cove. She is surprisingly chill with death. She's okay. Just like, oh, gosh, that's shocking. She's more chill with it than my grandmother.
Like, yes, and you know, your grandmother has a very odd relationship with death, as we remember.
But she's so chill with it. It's suspiciously chill.
Mm.
And like, you'd see at the end of every episode, in the start of the next episode, she's just as cheery and light and laughing and ha ha ha, life is wonderful. But when you're just after witnessing several brutal murders just the day beforehand, any normal person of normal mentality, you would be affected. Just even like coroners and morticians feel it eventually, like.
Well, they do say that there's a thing that happens to a lot of doctors and policemen, everything. They get a thing called compassion fatigue, where they just end up with a very black sense of humor. And I think we all know somebody that's a bit like that, you know. But it comes from having a lot of very dark experiences with people dying. But she doesn't seem to have that. And she's not a sociopath.
No, she's just a retired teacher and now mystery writer. She wouldn't have that mentality, because that would be someone like a doctor or a mortician that would see it so often. But these are spread out just enough that you would be traumatized seeing murders happen so much. But of course, if she is death, she'd know what happens in the afterlife.
So she's okay with it.
She would be completely at peace with it. It's like, oh, they're just going off to the other side. She would be so chill and happy and like, lovely.
Don't worry, I know you lost your head in this life, but we can find it and put it back for you when we get over to the other side. It'll be grand.
Yes, it'll be fine. Now, another thing, as I mentioned, she's a mystery writer. Mm-hmm. A lot of people in the alternative crackpot theory, the other theory, the wrong theory, is that she writes her murders in the book. And because
some internet weirdo out there would find the book and say, hang on, this seems a little bit too much like real life.
You'd be caught so quickly. However, what would you do, or who do you know would write down the events of murders in a book?
Of course, the Grim Reaper.
Not only that, but a Shinigami.
Ah.
Death Note style.
Is Murder, She Wrote just like a spin-off of Death Note then?
Maybe set in the same universe. There is nothing to tell me otherwise that it's very possible. But she writes to say, oh, this person died. And it could also be that she writes down people's deaths and solves their murder with the book in some form of Day of the Dead remembrance.
Or maybe
that's
just
also a thing.
Maybe some sort of an effort to make sure they don't come back and haunt people.
That's true. That's why I think she solves the murders. Oh. She's there to reap their souls and pass them on to the great unknown. But she solves the murder because the last thing you'd want is a load of angry souls just knocking about, seeking vengeance because their murder wasn't solved.
That's a good point, because like Cabot Cove, would you call it a very cheery place despite all the murder?
Yes, anytime you see it, it's lovely. There's loads of flowers, there's sun. It's a fishing village, so everybody's like, oh yes, let's go out on the sea. And it's a very nice place. If you saw it on a brochure, you'd be like, yeah, I'd want to take my vacation there. Like,
yeah, well, here's a little thing, right? I mean, obviously, because we live in Ireland, we are privy to a lot of places that are haunted, including Loftus Hall, which is relatively near to me. Have you ever been in Loftus Hall?
I have indeed. I once spent Halloween there when I was in college.
Wow, that was cool. What was it like?
It was amazing. Oh my God. We had all got dressed up and stuff. It was absolutely amazing. I'd highly recommend it.
Yeah. Did it feel like it had an atmosphere to you?
Yes.
Okay.
I always feel when a place is haunted, it has a weight to the air almost.
Yes, that is true. Whether you believe in ghosts or not, there's something just in the atmosphere there. The things that were bad happened there. Like, obviously, it's not the night Loftus Hall, because Loftus Hall is notorious for being the most haunted place in Ireland.
Yeah.
But I live up the road from one castle and down the road from another castle. and across from a historical battlefield as well. And sometimes when you're going past those places, you do feel a bit of an atmosphere there. You know?
Yeah.
But then Cabot Cove is this beautiful, happy place. So not haunted.
And people are constantly moving there or going there on vacation.
Despite all the death.
There's constantly people going there. Like if you saw somewhere that had that level of murder in it, you'd stay away. Like I would hardly think Honduras has a booming tourist industry. Like I don't actually know. There might. I don't know. But you wouldn't be like, this is the most dangerous city in the world. I'm going to totes go there on my honeymoon. Like,
there are people who deliberately go to places that are notorious or very dangerous. Like you can literally go on a holiday where you get treated like a person trying to get across the border. and caught by border security.
And that's where the serial killers happen in Cobb Cove.
Okay.
Those are the crazy people that go to commit the murders there.
No, I mean, there's a lot of, like, there is a thing called dark tourism where people where people will want to go to somewhere that, I mean, myself and you, we went to the Bone Ossuary in the Czech Republic.
I have now been to 3 Bone Ossuaries. Wow. Because I went to the one in Paris and also when we were in Rome.
Nice. But what was the appeal, you know, for you personally?
I don't know. It's just some form of morbid curiosity.
There you go. Yes, but Cabot Cove does not have that element despite all the death that's happened there.
It's so cheery.
I mean, if you were a dark tourist, you wouldn't consider Cabot Cove to be up there on your list of places to go in order to get some sort of morbid thrill.
It's like going to Killarney. It's like, it would be like Killarney. It's so like, oh, this is so wholesome and look at the flowers. Like, you wouldn't ever expect that it was a gateway to hell.
Okay, yeah. Well, I mean, I think, didn't we establish in one of our theories that hell is quite a deceptive place? Or, like, that enjoys subversions?
I suppose.
I forget which one. I think it might have been in the Exorcist episode where we were talking about, you know.
Yes.
Where they like to come out at Christmas because of subversion.
Speaking of hell.
Okay.
Another interesting fact about Jessica Fletcher is she never drives.
Oh.
Throughout the entire thing, you never ever see Jessica drive. She either rides a bike or takes a cab or that, but she's never in control of the car. She never ever drives. And this is a very interesting thing that, again, I'm going to stretch out my hamstrings. In the Bible, death will ride a pale horse when the apocalypse comes. Mm. Cars, horsepower. She'll never drive because when she does eventually drive, that will be when the apocalypse happens. Because that will be her riding in on a pale horse. She'll probably be in a silver sedan coming to like wreck the world.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yes, it does make sense because you only ever see her like as a passenger or like taking a cab or on trains or bicycles, but she never actually drives the car / or iron horse, you know?
Yeah. Does she ever ride a bike?
Yeah. I said that.
Oh, sorry.
You're not paying attention.
I am paying attention. It's just hard to keep all these threads connected. You have to work very quickly.
Yes, she does ride a bike. And in the opening sequence, you can see her coming in with her little basket in the front, going up the seaside with her bike.
Yeah.
But it's a black bike, I checked. Okay. I thought it was like, oh, it'd be great if she had a white one. That would make so much sense. But no, it's a black one.
Yeah, no, I think though that is a bit of a subversion in that people do used to call it the iron horse, but it's not the same.
But cars have horsepower,
yeah,
and they would be the modern version of a horse. Like if you think about it, back in the oldie days, everybody had a horse as their mode of transport.
Of course,
but now everybody has cars.
Yes,
so yeah, and now only rich people have horses, but. It makes sense that she is definitely an omen of death.
Okay.
But not necessarily a malicious one, because I think she'd be the type that would come when you're scared or you've just been murdered and you're just a soul there and you're panicking and you're like, oh my God, what's going on? That's my corpse.
Well, I think there was a very loose quote from the likes of I think it was Jacob's Ladder, where the guy said that you know, if you're fighting against your own death, then the creatures trying to pull you away from this life look like horrible demons, but if you accept your death, they look like beautiful angels coming to carry you away to your rest. So yeah, I think she's possibly deliberately trying to kind of be a nice calming influence so that these people don't hold on to life when life is clearly slipping away from them.
And if you're panicking and you've just been murdered, you want somebody there that's going to make it feel okay and be like, okay, you're I can trust you, you're nice and stuff. And if I was to die in the morning, I think it would be deadly if Angela Lansbury came and just said, "It is time, Circa, you must go to hell."
What? Is she escorting these people to hell?
No, just me. Everybody else probably gets to go to heaven or something, but I've done some things, man. I've accepted my faith.
Okay, fair enough.
But I think it would be a nice thought that somebody as nice and sweet and as soft-spoken with a lovely voice would come to you and be like, yeah, I'll take you on. So that is definitely what I think is going on in Murder, She Wrote. I don't think it's the serial killer thing because there's so many holes that you can plot in it.
Yeah, completely.
With fingerprints, DNA, and she's actively participating in the investigation. Like, I know Dexter, that the TV series showed him actively participating, but he eventually got caught out.
Yeah.
And he was nowhere near as close as 270 odd deaths. Like.
Absolutely not, yeah.
And you can see in the show, you actually get to see some of the murders take place. So you know 100% that it's not Jessica doing it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's a man pulling that trigger kind of thing. So.
Absolutely. And I mean, has there ever been any murders in the episode that have been done by multiple people?
Yes.
Well,
loads.
There you go, yeah.
Conspiracies and stuff. And some were actually like accidents and it's like, oh no, there wasn't a murder at all. There was just a really unfortunate accident. And then some were like suicides and stuff.
And then one was a dog.
But that's why I can't get behind that she's a serial killer, because it's like she's always there just before. And it would be more like an angel of death to arrive before a murder and to be at the right place in the right time than, say, a serial killer.
Yeah, completely. So, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I love Murder, She Wrote. If you haven't actually watched Murder, She Wrote, it is such a comfy watch. It's not something you have to invest a lot of brain power in, like if you're watching Game of Thrones or if you're watching like CSI or something like that. You don't have to put a lot of brain power in it. You just flake it on in the background and just hear the dulcet, wonderful tones of Angela Lansbury going, "Now this murder was caused by this kind of gun. This kind of gun was only made in the 1900s by this particular person that happened to be shacking up with this person that happened to be shacking up with this person. That dog stole it that one time and it was landed in Cabot Cove, and that's how that murder got taken place, because of papers to do with some business dealy thingies." And that is an average Murder, She Wrote episode.
Okay.
Yeah, there was one episode that I nearly lost my mind at, though, and this is for the most stupidest reasons. They were at a ballet.
Okay.
I absolutely love ballets.
Ditto.
They warm my soul. And they were trying to do Swan Lake. And it was like, great, great. But they were not playing the music from Swan Lake. It's like, that music is not from Swan Lake.
What was it from?
It was from The Nutcracker. Like, that is a different ballet.
Like, same composer, but different ballet. That is sacrilege.
The ballet did not match the music. And I was there like, oh, you did blasphemy. Blasphemy.
Oh, God. It does kind of go along with our whole nitpicky thing that we would notice something like that.
Yes. It was like when I was watching Downton Abbey and one of the actresses had a mark of a vaccination that wouldn't have been around at the time. And I'm like, oh, I spot your continuity error.
It's like anytime I see a corset laced up in both the back and the front and I just go, no,
that's not how it works. Only harlots wear it like that.
Not even. Why would you corset something in the back and the front?
Aesthetics.
These days.
These days.
But back then it was practical. Anyway, there was all the complaining I did last week about Belle's ball gown. So yeah, but we'd better move on from this. Otherwise, I'm just going to launch. This is going to turn into a whole different podcast.
But again, I highly recommend that. You watch Murder, She Wrote. I can't recommend it enough. But I kind of was, when I was researching this, I kept trying to find ways that this could work. And then I kept coming across the Death Note thing, that she does write the things down in a book, which I'm just like, how would it connect to the Death Note universe? Death Note universe.
Death Note universe.
I'm very tired. I have awful mush mouth. No, I'm so sorry.
It's okay. That's part of the reason why I'm here.
But yeah, I was trying to figure out how it could work and I couldn't really find any strings there. I'm so sorry.
No, that's okay. I think you've done a very good job. Your notes are quite amazing to look at, I have to say.
You should see the like crate that we are down in the bunker, that it's just covered with papers and string and way too much sellotape.
Yeah, do you remember that do you remember that film Seven, when they broke into your man's house and he had all these scrawls all over the place? Yeah, that's sometimes that reminds me of you.
Because, like, I'm trying to look at my notes that I scrawled frantically while watching, and I can't read half of my own writing. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. It's okay. But you did come across some very interesting mythological parallels there.
Yeah, because every mythological culture and that, and every culture and country has its own, like, theories about death and about what would bring death, like the omens of death and stuff like that. So it was really interesting to see how much of it connected to Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, the Doulahan thing. The heads of the Doulahans are supposed to be, like, depicted with bright, wide smiles. If you ever see Jessica Fletcher,
she's got a bright, wide smile.
She's always smiling and has that lovely, gorgeous Angela Lansbury smile that just warms your heart. And it just makes sense. And when I figured out that the Irish episode had them actually being decapitated, I was like, oh, they're making this so obvious. They're putting it out there. This is about as covered up as Area 51, man.
Yeah.
It's so obvious. It's
yeah,
so obvious.
It really is. Do you know what's really funny, though, is that you can kind of carry it over to another role that she had. Like I mentioned earlier on, the film In the Company of Wolves, which was directed by Neil Jordan, an Irishman, where she plays the grandmother of the Little Red Riding Hood character.
Oh, okay.
And she gets decapitated by the wolf. But there's this whole thing about, like, witches and the devil and people getting dragged to hell, and then wolves. I mean, in some cultures, wolves are very synonymous with death.
Yeah.
And also play a part in kind of the Dracula myth as well, which is another death myth that we can consider. I mean, a lot of Angela Lansbury's roles, you can probably see her as being either an antithesis or a harbinger of death. I mean, there was that whole thing with her as Mrs. Potts and her kid having the little chip out of him.
Yes.
When do cups ever get chips taken out of them? Was when they get dropped.
Oh.
Yeah. So, and it's hinted that all the other little teacups there are also her children. And I mean, how many times have you dropped a cup in your lifetime? Dropped and broken a cup?
Way too many. I'm very clumsy.
There you go. And I'm sure that the beast with his massive paws is probably no similar. And yet, Mrs. Potts seems very chipper. Chipper. No.
Bleak.
Oh, God,
like,
yeah.
A lot of depictions of, like, the Grim Reaper would be traditionally male. You would see them as, like, the skelly bobs, as I said, except in some, in particular, like Irish ones, do often see them as women. Like banshees would be omens of death as well, which are seen as elderly women with very distinctive voices.
Do you know what's really funny is I can't believe it's taken me this long to figure it out, but the whole banshee thing actually came about because that's the noise the foxes make.
Yes.
At night when they're calling to each other. It's just rawr, kind of thing.
Have you ever watched Jonathan's Creek?
No.
Jonathan's Creek is another kind of murder mystery thing with Alan Davis. It's set in the UK. I think it's in like Yorkshire or something.
Who knows?
Do not quote me on where it's actually set, but it's set in...
We do have Doubter's Corner for mistakes we make, so we can make the mistakes please with impunity.
It's been a while since I watched it, but it was definitely set in the UK. And every, like, few minutes in the episodes when they're around like Alan's house or Jonathan's house as he plays it, you can just hear the screeching of foxes in the background because it was obviously filmed in location.
Yeah.
So you just hear the and just in the background of foxes. And if you didn't know that that was the sound a fox makes, it just sounds like people are being murdered
it
in the
does.
Because it's that high-pitched shrill.
They sound like a woman screaming.
I won't replicate the proper sound of a fox.
You mean that wasn't it?
No. I have lost enough of my dignity.
No, you see, because I live in the countryside, I would hear them quite a lot. And I mean, yeah, if you didn't know that that was the noise that a fox makes, what does a fox say? Oh, God.
It sounds like the screeching of hell is what it sounds like.
It does, but you would hear them quite often. And then, you know, people used to die a lot more back when this legend was on the go. So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Do you know what's really funny, actually? I was going to bring this up in a different episode. I was considering doing a St. Patrick's Day episode about Irish folk songs.
Oh, Lord.
because I hate Christy Moore with a passion because he ruined my childhood. The main reason being I used to have to sit through a lot of long car journeys. When my parents or my uncle in particular had a tape of Christy Moore songs. And one of them was the song Ride On.
Oh, no.
You know, where you're the first thing your man goes is, "True, you ride the finest horse I've ever seen." It's like, how do you start off a romantic song by complimenting your woman's horse?
That's a fine stallion you got there, missus.
And any sort of like lapses into, "I could never go with you no matter how I wanted to." And it's like, why are you giving up already? Is there something wrong with this woman that you can only compliment your horse? It only occurred to me later on, as well as that, in the second verse, he starts talking about run your claw along my gut one last time. Like, why is she attacking you? What's going on?
Werewolf or something?
No, like, this is supposed to be a romantic song, but it is grim as anything. And then I sort of connected it to, okay, he is singing about one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Clearly. He is singing about somebody who has an amazing horse. Who is going to have a more amazing horse?
Angela Lansbury.
Death who rides a pale horse.
I just picture Angela Lansbury and Christy Moore in the weirdest ship fic in the world.
Just playing his bow on while he watches her gallop across.
Oh, lads. Oh, no. That would be just majestic, though. I have a sudden urge to like see if anybody has ever made these two dots connect before.
Very few people know about Christy Moore outside of Ireland. Very few people want to know about Christy Moore outside of Ireland. No, do you know what? That's probably being a bit unfair. My personal feelings about Christy Moore and his music are not a reflection of the man himself. And you should not take my word for it. Listen to his music, judge for yourself. I have a lifelong grudge that I am never going to let go of because he made me listen to that music all the way to Galway. That and this stupid song about an oak tree on Dungarvan.
That is very, very specific.
Yes, yeah, it's a song called The Old Dungarvan Oak. Now, my mother lives in Dungarvan and I cannot hear the word Dungarvan without thinking of that song.
Oh, good Lord.
It has scarred me for life. But yes, I do believe that Christy Moore wrote that song about death. About death on a pale horse.
That would make sense.
Yes, it would make sense. And especially because it's a romantic ballad. If death was very pleasant to look at and encounter, then yeah, it's going to sound quite romantic. But at the same time, he is dying. So of course he's going to talk about his claws running along his gut.
Well, sometimes death is predicted, like depicted as being very attractive. Like if you take Death from the Sandman comics by Neil Gaiman, very attractive. I instantly just thought of the Death from Terry Pratchett. He's like, no, he's not attractive at all. He's just funny. But
I mean, there's people out there.
But Death from Deadpool as well was supposed to be hot. as well.
Yeah, well, like, there was also that whole thing where Thanos in the original comics, you see, when I first did a theory about the song Ride On, my theory was that it was written from the point of view of Thanos because he was trying to court death.
That was also true. It's the same death that Deadpool is with as well. Deadpool is in love with that exact same death in the comics.
Right, okay, yeah. So so death does take on different kind of personas depending on what kind of things you're into.
Yeah.
Which would explain a lot of the very weird depictions, because as you know, there are people out there.
There are just people out there in general. No. I haven't been out in the bunker in a while. I don't know if there's any left.
No, but you know the kind of people that I'm talking about. The kind of weirdos that we know about.
Yes.
That we will not talk about in great detail, but...
A friend of mine is really obsessed with Sans from Undertale at the moment. And I'm like, if ever there was somebody that would ship, like, death with themselves, it would definitely be her. Bless her.
Yeah, that's actually... That's not even an uncommon thing, is it? It is not the weirdest thing I have ever seen anybody ship in my lifetime. So, yes, of course, even going back years, people would probably have shipped... Like, there was all, that whole thing as well... The picture of Death and the Maiden, the ancient depiction. I mean, in some ways, yeah, this is a very scary picture. But then in some ways, it's also cast in a kind of weirdly romantic light. Mm. Oh, and there was this really interesting book that I was reading about 18th century romanticizing of the look that people who were dying of consumption got.
Yeah, the dark circles and stuff.
And the very blue veins and the translucent skin and all the rest, where it was really romanticized. Like, this was the absolute ideal of human beauty, that you could look like you were literally on your deathbed. I mean, there is that whole thing where they make death look like a very pleasant thing to happen, you know? And of course, if you are very, very ill, then death seems like a very promising prospect, considering how much suffering your life is.
That just made me think of Valkyries as well.
Explain.
Beautiful women in armor come, like, when you die, to take you to Valhalla. If in, like, Norse mythology, there's supposed to be battle women that will come and, like, bring you to Valhalla if you're successful in your battle and that. And they're usually depicted as very beautiful.
Yeah, that is true. So does that mean that Jessica Fletcher at some point might have been a Valkyrie?
It's very, very possible.
Yeah, because I mean...
very possible.
Like, if we're saying that she is one of the personifications of death, then she's probably not a recent being. She's probably been around for millennia, appearing in different forms.
That also would make sense that she's very, very, like, ancient, because you never see her get, like, hurt or... vaguely hurt, but she's never seriously injured. And the amount of people that have tried to kill Jessica throughout it... is quite a high number, but they never succeed. It's because you'll never be able to actually kill death. So it would make sense if she was significantly older than she was.
Yeah.
And, like, she outlived her husband by a good amount. She never had kids or anything. It was just Frank Fletcher.
Yeah.
Was the husband's name. And he died under suspicious circumstances.
Don't they all?
Don't they all?
I mean, I suppose if you are a personification of death, then all of the deaths that you encounter are either suspicious or not suspicious at all.
Untimely.
It's just because, like, oh, you weren't on my books for another 2 weeks. What the heck happened?
Murder has happened.
But then that also does make me wonder if all kind of detective shows have at least one personification of death. Like...
yeah.
Dexter, Law and Order.
Jonathan's Creek.
Jonathan Creek, Miss Marple, Hercule Poirot.
Franny Fisher.
Oh, yeah. just like all murder mysteries have one character in there that is literally there just reaping souls. And who is it? Who is it in Law and Order?
Horatio Kane.
It could be him.
That's why he has sunglasses, because he's like, when he looked into his eyes, he'd see the cold depths of hell.
Oh, wow. Okay, wow. We really are through the...
through the looking glass on that one.
Yeah, and then, of course, that might even make sense with the likes of Seven.
Yeah.
You know, the police detectives, or maybe even the murderer himself. He just decided to... He went rogue and decided to speed things up a bit.
Like Sherlock Holmes, and then there's, like, Poirot, and there's Miss... as you said, Miss Marple. There's so many. Nancy Drew. Yeah, there's so many of these sleuths going around that it would only make sense if they were all versions of Grim Reapers, because there's so many people on Earth that there would have to be more than one Grim Reaper.
Of course, because yeah.
People drop like flies every couple of seconds.
Yeah, completely.
So you'd need more than one, and Jess can only do so much when she's in Cabot Cove and there's enough going on there. So like, you could bring in things like Jonathan Creek is the one for a lot of that part of the UK, Phryne Fisher's in like Australia, Pierrot's in France, I think.
Yeah, it is like, you know, the whole Tooth Fairy thing as well, that there's different representations in different parts of the world.
Yeah.
You know, because I think like every country has its own version of a detective story.
Yeah, because like America would need loads because America is so big and a lot of murders happen in that, I guess.
Well, it's because there's more people as well. Yeah, so that would absolutely make sense.
Yeah.
So we're going to wrap things up now. Do you have anything more to say about this theory? About your first solo theory?
I really hope that I made sense. I got awful mush mouth, but I'm just really excited to talk about it because I do love Murder, She Wrote so much. And I do hope you do give it a chance if you are into watching some nice cozy things. And I got a bit excited and fumbled a bit. I'm sorry.
It's okay. You're only human. Nobody expects you to be like an experienced radio presenter, because if they wanted experienced radio presenters, they'd listen to the radio.
Nobody listens to the radio. They're listening to us.
We hope, if there's anyone still out there. I don't know. We haven't left the bunker in a while.
No, as I said, I haven't left the bunker in a very long time. I don't know what the sky looks like anymore. It could possibly be red. The harbingers of death could already be there.
You know what's really funny is I was flying back through from London to Ireland at the start of the storm last week. And apparently it was a very bad flight. Like there was a lot of turbulence. There was people vomiting. There was people thinking that the plane was going to crash. I don't remember any of that because I was fast asleep. So I don't know. I'm starting to think that might make me powerful in some way.
In that a near death not experience. Touch
me. Near it was death a near death experience that I don't remember. But that happened to me before. That happened to us before on a really bad flight as well. Remember?
Oh gosh, we were all going to Lithuania, and.
Or were we going back from Lithuania?
We were going to Lithuania, okay. I believe. And I am an uneasy flyer. I am basically 80% anxiety at a given day. I take a lot of Xanax. And I was very nervous flying, and so Sinead had completely passed out asleep, as she does the minute she like hits that airplane seat, she's gone. It's like the ultimate lullaby for the woman.
Not just on planes, but everywhere. Buses.
But there was me, white knuckling it, because I was just terrified at the thoughts of flying in general. And then as we're going up, we're taking off. The scariest part of flying is taking off, because that's theoretically when most accidents happen. They decided, oh, we just need to restart the engines. So when we're in mid-takeoff, they decided to restart the engine. Scared me half to death that I was seeing Angela Lansbury coming for me.
Just on the wing of the airplane, like that episode of The Twilight Zone. Sorry, I'm here for you.
Tale as old as time. You're going to die. But I was scared beyond belief, because the Mad Jokes decided to turn off the engines during takeoff, and the plane like just dipped and took off again, and my heart stayed on the ground because it was just the worst of times. Don't fly, kids. It's unnatural.
I think you had a full-blown panic attack and there was nobody around to help because I didn't wake up.
It happens quite often. There's one Ryanair flight attendant that has had me on 3 flights now. And just came to me that when myself and my husband were coming back from Paris, I had a very bad panic attack. He just offered me some whiskey. I was just like, would you like some whiskey? It's on me. Are y'all right? Like, bless his soul. 3 times we've gotten the same guy. He must see me coming and just be like, so oh, you're like, no.
You're like his Angela Lansbury now.
The harbinger of doom.
Okay, Okay. Yeah, I think we'd better finish this episode up. So if you would like to join us in our shenanigans, you can find us on Twitter at Crackpot Pod. You can find us on Instagram, also on Crackpot Pod. You can find us on YouTube. Well, please don't, for the love of God. I do not want people to see my terrible drawings on YouTube. But there's only 4 episodes up there anyway, so who cares? I'm working on the rest of them. It's just going really, really slowly. We have a Tumblr account as well, but it is basically a cat's fandom blog now at this stage, because Surika has not taken control of it from me like she should have done, and I have turned it into a cat's fandom blog.
Everyone needs a cat's fandom blog.
Flandom? What's a flandom?
A flandom flag.
Okay, but you can join us there if you want. Please don't. But you will mostly find us on Twitter, where we are talking about the most random stuff. And we are always happy to talk to people who are listening to our podcast about the most random of things. You can tell us how your kids are doing. You can you can give us an update on the weather wherever you are. You can ask us the stupidest of questions and we will answer them. So we're always up for that kind of thing, for the most part.
We're also on iTunes and Spotify and
Buzzsprout.
Yes.
Okay, we're
on most, a lot of places.
Yeah, we're on most places that you'll find good podcasts. And if you have enjoyed the show, you can leave us a review on iTunes. It really helps other people find our podcast if you would be able to do that for us. It doesn't even have to be a positive review if you want. If you want to tell people that our podcast is terrible, then you feel free to do that. I fully support you in your warning people about this.
That is so harsh.
I know.
I'm too soft. But I do hope you are enjoying the podcast. It's been really fun doing it and we hope to be doing it for a very long time to come. So any support that you have for us or anything is so much appreciated. So thank you so much for all of our listeners so far. It's great. We know there's been a few reoccurring listeners, which is absolutely amazing to see. And this is our first time doing podcasts and it's really cool to see the reception we've gotten so far. And it's so motivating. So if you do want to talk to us on Twitter, please do, and give us suggestions. If you have your own crackpot, we might discuss it in a future podcast. And it's just exciting. And thank you so much, everyone.
Yes, thank you very much. This has been another episode of Crackpot Theories. Always remember that the truth is out there and it is significantly weirder than you ever thought it could be.
So weird. Okay. Bye.